to Screen Tone Club, episode 14. We are recording on the 16th of December, 2018, for release on Christmas Day, the 25th of December, 2018. Merry Christmas! This is your fortnightly look at manga. We're focused on joint discussion with myself, Elliot Page, and my lovely elf co-host, Andy Hanley. How are you doing, Andy?
I feel like I'm underdressed for this role now. I didn't realize we were doing full blown pantomime.
He's behind you. Oh no, he isn't. Oh well, it's either you can either be an elf or Mrs. Claus. Take your pick.
Can I be both? Can't we have a new story for Christmas?
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Whatever, Rudolph. Sorry, this bit went stupid. But so this is your last free/normal episode for the year before we close down and eat a lot of turkey and hibernate. Quite frankly, we still have the patrons only bonus episode to come later in the month, which at the time of release will already have been decided, and so you will know more than we do now what it is. We've, as mentioned before, we've got an interesting bucket of stuff that people are gunning for us to read, so looking interesting already. One very polite person, God bless you, said, hey, I have a few ideas, but I don't want to make you read anything you don't want to. And I'm like, dude, that's the whole point. You're paying your money for, like,
you must be new here.
Yeah, I thought most of our actual Patreon was like spite or something. Very welcome spite, I quickly add. On that note, if you wish to support us on Patreon, that would be very greatly appreciated. It helps take care of the bills, and also hopefully with a little more we'll be able to cover the cost of our books we buy. But yeah, you can find that at screentone.club, and there's a link right there for our Patreon. You can get bonus episodes every month from $1 a month. That's all you need. So, as mentioned, this is our sort of holiday show. We're going to have a very informal, very relaxed year-end wrap-up. But that comes after, dun-dun-dun, Returning Champions. So I feel like I've put this off far too long, Andy. Did you want to talk about Voynich Hotel Volume 2?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have too much to say. This is another of my kind of my own returning series of things that we said was good before is still good. Newsflash, yeah. Because yeah, this is another series that's very much like, oh yeah, everything that I liked about the first volume is still very much intact and in place, and kind of, you know, firing on all cylinders in the second volume. So I still like all of the main characters and their various kind of goofy bits. I still like the comedy of that series. Kind of like having had a break after the first volume, going back into volume two, I forgot just how many plot threads like the series has as a whole. There were so many moments that were just like, oh yeah, this was a thing that was happening, wasn't it? And I kind of completely forgot about it, because there's plenty of things going on over the course of the series. But yeah, like I'm looking forward to getting the third, and I think it's the final volume, right?
Yep, final volume.
So yeah, so I'm looking forward to getting hold of that next year. I think that comes out like February time.
It does, yeah, it does.
Yeah, so yeah, but yeah, it's really enjoyable. Like it's exactly the kind of like crazy comedy and kind of weird but wonderful characters that I can really get behind. And you know, it develops some of those storylines quite nicely, you know, mostly towards a comic bent, and I kind of came out of it really satisfied and glad that I'd decided to keep up with it.
Yeah, I really need to get that second volume. I mean, even on the first volume we get to points where you're like, wait, is this a serious plot point or a throwaway gag or both? Like, who knows? Another thing that I think I mentioned in our actual review of it is I'm really glad it's three volumes, where like it's one of these things where like I can already see how much road it has for itself, and I don't really need to worry so much about it running out of ideas and dragging on forever. So
yeah,
actually really excited for it to be short, which maybe is a sign of my age, but again, it's just like, oh good, you've got the amount of time you need planned out, let's go through it.
Yeah, there are so many series that I like that kind of start out as like, oh, this is great, and then you get to a certain kind of volume threshold, like, ah, this should probably have ended now. So yeah, it's kind of nice sometimes just to know it's going to be very short and compartmentalized in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, it always feels like some kind of stringed instrument snapping, where you're just like, do 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 twang, and your patience for it has gone, and you don't, and it's like a pit opened up in your head. It's like, oh, I don't enjoy this anymore. What? Like, it's really weird sometimes when it happens, especially if you're like 14 volumes in and then just like, you know, you're done. But yeah, woof. So, or from my part, I continued reading Until Your Bones Rot, which we covered in our live show. I read volume 2, which I got free. I got as part of a Humble Bundle, regardless. And I needed to think about this a bit. I tried thinking about this before this we recorded to have put my thoughts in order, but this volume is really weirdly languid because it pulls out a lot of events that you could partially see coming, but at least in my case, you saw them coming and were like, man, I hope they don't do that. That'd be bad. And then it does them, and I'm like, ah, fuck. And it does a load of stuff that I feel is it kind of trying to speed itself up. And it ends on a real kind of not left field. Like I always imagined it happening, but from a meta theory crafting point of view, I don't know what's going to happen now. Like something big has happened at the end of this volume that weirdly solves a lot of problems, but creates loads more in a case of, wait, hang on, what next for this series? Because this was a whole unexplored avenue and you've just cut it short in this manner. Like, whoa. It's got loads and loads of weird drama and love polygon and all that, as you may expect, and was kind of obvious from even the very first page. It does the whole bloody annoying thing 2/3 through, where it has a nice tender moment between a pair of characters, which ends on an ambiguous note, and you think, okay, fine. And then the last two speech bubbles from like a pseudo narrator are like, little did I know that they would never keep their promise. And I'm like, ah, what? Like it really just sucks all the air out of a room when I ever saw that. I'm like, ah, really? Like you're going to do that, are you? And it sucks because it undercuts what happens next, which is a big deal, but you know what it is. You know something's going to happen. So it's kind of annoying in that regard. Mm. Yeah, it's very irritating. So there's 5 volumes left of this. I partially, on the strength of the ending of this volume, want to continue reading it, but at the risk of sounding really mean and miserly, not at full price. I might wait for a sale, and if there's another sale like the Halloween one, I might pick it up, at least pick up volume 3 to see how it resolves the threads it's thrown open. But also, like, as time has gone on, the characters have gone from being interesting to kind of unlikable as hell, which really hurts when it's focusing on a small ensemble cast of very intensely intertwined characters. And now that easily all of them have at least, like, all of them are kind of unlikable and some of them are deeply unlikable. And so it's kind of hard to really care about it at that point.
Because that was one of the things with kind of volume 1 is you felt like the characters were always teetering in that direction. It's like, okay, like there are interesting facets to them, but they were always skirting around the edge of a town called I'm a Jerk, and it kind of felt like they were going to kind of step over the boundary at any moment. So I'm kind of not surprised to hear that most of them seem to have done exactly that.
Yeah, the current scorecard is 4 jerks and 1 person you have not spent any time with, and so you can't form a judgment about, which is weird. So yeah, I would like to continue, but not for full price, which is mean. But hey, I got time and priorities, I'm afraid. So that's that.
Yeah, that seems fair. I mean, it does sound interesting that it's kind of had another kind of shift in tone or whatever it's doing with its story for the third volume. Like, I'd certainly be curious to hear how that winds up if it does go on sale at some point, because it sounds like it needs to change gears somewhat from what you've just said.
Yeah, it kind of pulls something I didn't think it would do until right near the end. And it's like, oh, whoa, okay. Blimey, you're okay. Well, I wonder what you're going to do now. So, yeah, maybe I'm thinking too hard and trying to second guess it, which is a bad idea. But still, it keeps me interested. cool. So that's Returning Champions out of the way. Still reading lots of stuff in the background, of course. And so moving on to Returning Champions Part 2, which is our year-end wrap-up, which, as mentioned, highly informal because I had plans, grand plans for this, and then life kind of was just highly exhausting. And so here we are. So first and foremost, we've covered a half decent amount of series on this podcast to date. And I just wanted to sort of get our feeling on which one stuck out to us. Although I think this one might be an easy question in that, at least for my money, the two series that we've covered in this show and I've really kind of got on a bender about are Dead Demons DD Destruction and The Promised Neverland. I think you might agree with me in that case, Andy, somehow.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah, Promised Neverland is kind of the big one that's really kind of stuck with me. And certainly, like, I know we're not alone in that. You know, as I think I mentioned on the last show, you know, I'm kind of getting prodded and teased to keep on reading and to kind of catch up with the latest chapters, because it keeps on going places. And yeah, it kind of fills a manga gap that I think has been left ever since kind of Death Note, really. Like, nothing's quite captured that sort of zeitgeist, and this is the first series that has really done that well, and was also involved in avoiding the more problematic parts of Death Note that we all tried to forget. Nah. So yeah, like, it's hugely compelling. Obviously, anime adaptation on the way, which I'm also really interested to see kind of how that handles things. But yeah, like, this is the manga series that I find myself just kind of idly thinking about while I'm making a cup of tea or whatever, thinking like, oh yeah, like, you know, I wonder what's going to happen with that next, or more to the point, like, when's the next volume coming out, because I really need to read more of this.
Or yeah, or personal point of view is, I hope they'll be okay.
Like, yeah.
Like, you know, like, it's wild, because both the characters on their own stand alone as being an empathetic bundle, but also there's the intellectual curiosity of, oh man, what's going to happen next? Or, oh man, what are they going to find out about the world next? And by extension, what am I going to find out about the world next? It's just like that, you know, kind of weird noises all here, but it is a case of like, man, I really want to see what happens to these characters. Like, end of. So yeah, it really keeps you on the hook. Much the same as Dead Demons, honestly, which is like intensely relatable and fascinating to read. It gets up its own bum every now and then, ever so slightly, but also knows when to pull out. And just really, really good to get your teeth around and kind of chew it over. Like, it's crazy, because it's happy, it's sad, it's really kind of runs you through the gamut. It's very wistful in a weird way. You know, it feels like you're watching your own Lost Generation in a strange manner. But man, is it fascinating, and I cannot wait to see what it does next.
Yeah, like, that's definitely the series that is kind of like my 2018 aesthetic in so many ways. Like, it feels like it sort of captures the spirit of the moment, and like you say, kind of a generation in a broader sense, in a way that is really occasionally depressing, but mostly just incredibly compelling. And it's also like, just in terms of like the artwork of that thing, is something that I just enjoy kind of gawping at whilst I'm also kind of taking in the story, because it looks fantastic. And if there's one thing that I kind of need to put on my to-do list for 2019, it is to read more Inio Asano stuff, because there are a few things that I've not touched that I should get into come the new year. So that's kind of very much on my new year resolution list, off of the back of reading this and kind of getting a reminder of like, oh yeah, like, this stuff is good. I should read more of this person's work.
If you fancy it, I can always schedule us a series or volume or two in future episodes, if only that I will actually have a reason to sit down and finish Solanin after at least 5 attempts to do so since I purchased it over a decade ago. I know I've talked about this on a previous podcast and with you extensively, Andy, but Solanin is the manga. It's like a one-shot deluxe edition, big honking single volume from Inio Asano about, you know, being a mid-20-year-old and like finding out that the workforce sucks nuts and life does not go as you think it would or should, even when you do everything you're supposed to. And it's really emotionally raw, especially when I first got it again a decade ago. And oh lordy, I could not finish it. And every attempt I've had has failed, because I've had to put it down at some point and go for a walk and then not pick it back up again because it felt too intense, which maybe partially is because I'm a massive wuss, which I'm fully able to accept, but it's a real powerful work. So there's that. Also, one thing I forgot to mention, this kind of is a weird combo of this question, but I want to also say Inside Mary, which the only reason it hasn't stuck with me is because I binge read the entire damn thing in like 3 days. So yeah, Inside Mary, very good, really enjoyable. Please see our previous episode where we talked about it at length.
yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I mean that's a weird one where, like, if somebody asked me about reading that series, I'm not sure I would recommend like binge reading it that quickly, but at the same time, like, both you and I did exactly the same thing simply because we felt compelled to. So maybe that is the best way to read it. I'm not actually sure.
I mean, it was a case of like, I got to see what happens next. Like, I got to see what happens next. Like, I just need to know. Or I think I've got an idea. I want to see, you know, it was just a case where it wasn't like I had to, you know, it wasn't a case of like, I must read this now. It's just like, okay, I'm already on the hook and I'm already juiced to go. So let's just keep going here. So yeah, I really appreciated that. Is there anything else for you in this section, Andy?
No, I think out of the stuff that we've read this year, kind of a lot of it, even stuff I've enjoyed, I've not really had chance to kind of dig in any further with most of it, you know, apart from a few things that we've mentioned as kind of returning champions that have been pretty good. But no, like those two series for me are the ones that are absolutely kind of, you know, head and shoulders above everything else I've read this year, to be honest.
Yeah, as you mentioned previously, like they sit in the front of your mind, especially Promised Neverland, because oh boy. I hope it gets big. Like you mentioning that it could be the next like Death Note style thing. Like, God, imagine a bunch of Emmas running around Comic Con. Everyone getting weird ass number tattoos on their necks. Jesus. Okay, cool. So next sort of section is, what have you read this year that you've fallen off of? I have a few, but now I've read your answer in this Google Doc, Andy. I want to hear what you have to say about this.
Yeah, well, so this is more kind of a confession of guilt rather than kind of me throwing shade at things. But I have fallen off reading the Monogatari series, which I'm going to get back on because somebody's bought me the complete season one box set. So I have them all in my possession now. To kind of read a lot of the stuff that's come out thus far. But it's just one of those things, like it's partly weirdly just out of having had so many years where people have kind of been either in hushed tones or just outright shouting, like, somebody should localize Monogatari and release it in English. And then it kind of happened and everyone was really excited. And it's one of those things when nothing can quite live up to the hype that is kind of built around something. So I think kind of like reading them was like, oh yeah, these are really good, but also I've seen the anime and also, man, these are coming out at a really fast clip, faster than I can read them. So at some point I just kind of like put it on pause. I want to get back into the Monogatari novels. You know, they are good. They do entertain me in all sorts of ways. So I shall endeavor to get back into that. So this is less that I've fallen off of it and more a personal, like, man, these things came out fast at a time when I didn't have chance to read lots of light novels, so this is more my bad and I need to rectify this in 2019.
Okay, I must admit I kind of fell off of it after back in Monogatari part 2 of 3, mostly because the thing I wanted I already read, which was Kizu Monogatari, the prequel, although it was written second. Ugh, God. But Kizu Monogatari, both the films and the light novel, were like the thing I wanted to finally see, and then the rest of it kind of, yeah, sure, that'll be there if I want to see it at any point, but the continuing adventures mishaps of Amuragi and Egits I was cool with, but the one thing I wanted to see was Kizu, the prequel sort of inciting event of all the other nonsense. And given that series of OAVs / movies was amazing and I love it dearly and the book's real good, I'm kind of good to check out here, quite frankly. I got the one thing I wanted.
I think that's understandable as well. I can certainly kind of I can certainly see that point of view, absolutely, because again, Kizu, I mean, that was a case of like the hype was entirely justified, like, you know, after all that incredibly long wait for the anime and getting to read the source material, it's like that part of it was like, oh yeah, this is exactly what everybody wanted. Fantastic.
I mean, it was weird as well, because for me at least, because for me the anime hype went on for so long that I completely forgot about it again, and then once the light novel came out ahead of time, I devoured it and was like, oh man, this is actually legit great, I can't wait to see how they animate this, oh man, the animation's great. It was kind of a ridiculous 1-2 punch of, oh wow, it worked, it pulled it off, good job.
Yes, so. I also had the wonderful experience last year at Scotland Loves Anime for the final film in the Kizu Monogatari trilogy of sitting next to one of my Anime Limited co-workers who has not consumed any other Monogatari apart from Kizu and was just highly baffled by the entire thing or why people were into it. So sitting there for an hour watching just kind of the odd expletive, just like, what the hell, was highly amusing to me.
Man, that sounds great. Oh dear. But yeah, I really love Kizu. For my part, the series I've fallen off of is Happiness, by the author of Promise Mary, Shizuo Oshimi. I was when we were recording a different podcast, I was really hot on this series, and I think you turned me onto it, Andy. But since volume, I think, 5, I've not kept up. I've kept buying it, but I've not really been in the mood to read it. It's gone through a number of transitions in its characters and its like world state that I feel it's kind of dropped the ball in a way that is highly uncharacteristic for this author. Like Flowers of Evil was masterful at just sort of going, yep, time to shift, you know, just pulling the gear lever until your head spun, but then putting it back in the right place. Whereas in Happiness, it's these cases where it's these transitions that just don't bring me along with them. Like something has happened and the series has moved on, but I didn't feel like I went with it. And like, I still love the art. I still love the characters. I still love all the mystery. And it almost feels a bit too dark at times where it's like, okay, there's not much to cling on to here, because whenever I cling on to anything, it turns into sand. And that kind of wears you out after a while. Especially given the rate of like collateral damage in that series, given, you know, it's about vampires. Vampires need to drink blood. Bad things happen. So, you know, you can kind of see where the problems are going to come from. And I do want to get, I still have like volume 7 and 8 to read, but I haven't picked them up I haven't opened them in my tablet, which, you know, very little effort required to break that seal. But I just haven't. I don't know. It's just gone out on me, man.
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually in exactly the same situation with that series as you. Like the early volumes, I was kind of like hanging off of every page and was just, you know, kind of enraptured and fascinated with what was panning out in that series. And then at some point, I literally got to the same point as you, where I kind of, you know, went through a couple of volumes and just kind of finished them. And rather than a like or an ooh, it was just like okay. And like, I didn't have that drive, you know, much like we talked about with Promised Neverland, of like, I need to see what happens next. It's just a case of like, yeah, I guess there'll be some more of this stuff in the next volume. And, you know, I didn't have the kind of the energy and the fire to kind of religiously seek out every forthcoming volume as soon as it hit and read it. And at some point, it just kind of drops towards the back of your mind of stuff that you want to read. So, yeah, I don't know. I feel like, given the author involved, I'm kind of still have an assumption that it will come good and turn out to be something great at some point. But it certainly, where I left it was very much a lull that it's been kind of difficult to get myself back on that particular horse.
Yeah. I mean, a similar sort of case, although not so much due to plot movement, is Saki, which is a Mahjong manga, which, big fan of the anime when I eventually finally got around to watching it. And the manga is ongoing and is kind of a miracle that it's coming out at all. But I have fallen off of it since the start of this year, simply because it started taking longer and longer for the actual like Mahjong battles to happen. And like the actual matches, that's the word, matches. I'm like, it's not a fight. But it just takes more and more time, and it's getting to the point in where the anime did the same thing, where the like character weird supernatural powers are getting out of hand, and it kind of sucks some of the fun of the earlier volumes out, where instead of it being like, hey, this girl grew up in a mahjong parlor and she has like just a sixth sense for game flow, and it then moves to, oh yeah, this girl's basically a vampire, and in darkness, she's invincible. And it's like, what the, no, like that, yeah. I mean, cool, but no, that's weird.
Yeah, and then while you have all of this crazy supernatural stuff going on, you still have Nodicus sat there saying, like, no, none of this stuff is real, like, there's no such thing, like, Mayong is Mayong, and it's like, there are people literally, like, phasing out in front of you and teleporting, and like, no, none of this is happening.
Yeah, meanwhile, like, every character's breasts are just growing a cup of volume.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, that's a series I fell off of last year simply from lack of time. Like, the volumes were coming out at a crazy clip, and, you know, I just wasn't able to keep up, and then I sort of started running out of time to read anything at all. So I'd be up for getting back into Saki. I did really enjoy everything that I read of it.
Yeah, maybe we should enter like the Saki Death Pact or something. But yeah, I remember the first like 9 or so volumes, I was like buying it on the day of release. And I'm like, yeah. And then after that, I continued buying it, but much slower. And now I'm like, I don't know, I'm free. I have 3 unread volumes in my account. And it's like, yeah, I should read this, but I got Promised Neverland to read. I know I keep coming back to it, but it's like, I got other stuff to read. You know, this Saki can kind of wait. It's not going to rot. So, yeah. You know, there's that. Cool. And finally, final question, although, you know, timelines being weird, but is there anything you're looking forward to in 2019? This is actually a cheat answer for me, because it's not happening in 2019, but I'm looking forward to Shonen Jump's like business refactoring and change to their system, where starting basically tomorrow as we record this, it's going to switch over to having a subscription model for its entire back catalog, and the latest stuff will be free to read for everyone. And so I'm actually kind of jonesing to like take a few days off, or probably a week actually, and then like sit down with my tablet and as far as possible, basically just binging all of Bleach, because it's been so long since I've read that. And I fell off of it real hard at one point during the, like the 3rd kidnapping arc or some garbage. So real keen to rip that off and take a look. Of course, it also makes me slightly salty that I bought all 27 volumes of Claymore when it was on sale, and I could have saved a lot of money by waiting. But hey, at least I got 27 volumes of Claymore on my tablet ready to go.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, 2019 is going to be a really interesting year to see like how that business decision kind of plays out, because I mean, certainly the word on the street is incredibly positive around people being excited for that thing. Like, I'm sure they have run the numbers and kind of looked at the business case for making that switch, and they're confident that, you know, they can make the money that they need and make it work from that point of view. But like, you know, it is a crazy kind of shift in the way that that publication operates. So I'm absolutely fascinated to see kind of whether it lives up to their expectations in terms of, you know, pulling people away from Scanlations, you know, getting subscribers on board. But yeah, like, I'm certainly on board with it to you know, I will be ponying up the cash and probably binge reading some stuff myself, because it's a ridiculous, you know, value proposition, the amount of content that they're offering for such a low price. It's like, why wouldn't I do that?
Yeah, precisely. I mean, yeah, I don't want to get into too much like industry pontificating and watching, but like, I'm really, as you are, I'm fascinated to see how it does. And from what I gather, like, it wasn't like the existing Shonen Jump product was doing badly and it needed a shake up, but I think they're very smartly sort of looking at the market and using what they have to make moves. And my fervent hope, honestly, is that it does pull people away from Scanlations into the realm of like reading Shonen Jump officially, because it's so exasperating when like someone like manages to rip like the scans a week before supposed release. And it just real sucks, because it sucks all the air out of the like continuing reading of any series that is ongoing.
And I mean, this feels very targeted at kind of addressing a lot of the excuses that people were making to kind of stick with reading stuff illegally. Like, you know, again, much like kind of when Crunchyroll went legit in the anime space, of course there'll always be people who'll make their excuses no matter what, but like, this feels like it very directly addresses kind of the issues of cost and timing that people were pointing at and saying, well, this is why, you know, piracy is better. It's like, well, no, like, we've basically, you know, we've killed both of those barriers, you know, killed both of those birds with one stone. So, you know, you're going to need some new excuses, guys.
Yeah, I mean, it's also like by reducing all the barriers they can for like same day, like same, you know, same day sort of like translations, they are doing the thing which we have both very frequently said, is you need to be more convenient than piracy. Like, you need to be more convenient than free, which is a tall order, and like, I'm not saying you can snap your fingers, but I think with this, Shonen Jump have found their in, and they've clearly put a lot of work and ideas into messaging and preparing for it. So I'm very curious to see, you know, how it spins out. So, because they're, you know, they're putting their Golden Goose product on the line for this, and they've got a lot of buy-in both on this side and in Japan. So real curious and interested to see how it does, and I hope it does well, quite frankly, because it'd be nice.
Yeah, likewise.
Yep. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that. And other than that, I can't think of anything else too much more at the moment that isn't just me talking about Promised Neverland more. I'm looking forward to another volume of Land of the Lustrous coming in 2019. The wait is already torture. I need to know more about my idiot, dumb, darling, like gem children. Fucking morons. God damn. Come on. Stop being morons. Oh my God. You poor stupid idiots. But yeah, I love that series so much. It's ridiculous. But yeah, that's me for 2019, quite frankly. Beyond that, I'm looking forward to being pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, like I'm very much just gonna roll with the punches and see what comes along. Like I'm sure there will be some series that we've probably not even considered at this point that will, you know, hit in English and we'll be amazed by them. So hopefully there'll be some cool stuff that will catch us unawares, because that's always the most fun stuff, when you don't expect something to be good and it turns out to be amazing.
Yep, it's always fun, always good time. Okay, so with all that out of the way, we can move on to the main part of our show, which is, well, our picks for this week. So first and foremost is my pick, which is Boarding School Juliet, Volume 1. So this is a series I didn't really consider before, but at Hibanacon, I went to a friend Niall's panel, which he does, called Hell in a Cell, which is like kind of narrated as a wrestling show. And it's all about cool-ass fight scenes in anime. And this was one series that was called out. There we are. So this is a series where the two principal characters, Romeo and Juliet, kind of, are in a big-ass boarding school between two warring nations. There's lots of fighting on campus. The dorms are split between the two nations. The school itself was created as like an attempt to try and foster peace between the two, you know, that sort of fantasy thing. And so the main character, who is Inazuka, who is a member of the Black Dog sort of nation, which basically is Japan, and one translation note basically just slaps this in your face. And there's also the White Cats, and their main leader is Juliet, quite honestly. And so the two of them are fighting, but it turns out that Inazuka really, really likes Julia. And when he gets called out by her, basically asks her out in the middle of a sword fight. And that's where the like action scene in the panel came from. And so this is kind of a romance, star-crossed lovers, to use a hackneyed term, series of misunderstandings. And, you know, they can't let anyone know that they're going out, because then both of their relevant sort of social groups will immediately dump them into a pit. It would be highly dishonorable for them to be going out of each other, and because they're supposed to be at war, blah blah blah. And so the two of them try and connive ways to carry on a relationship. And, you know, mostly you have a bit of a difference in intents, where Inazuka is kind of a massive puppy dog who is real love struck sort of like starry eyed twit, really soppy underneath his rather rough looking exterior. Whereas Juliet is very much a case of, hey, I live in a really backward country with really intense sort of like social mores and laws around them, and I need to work hard to try and overcome this nonsense to prevent something stupid from happening and my life becoming from naught because I wasn't born a man. And so it has this sort of imbalance where like Juliet is very much a case of, what? I guess we can go out. Yeah, sure. I mean, yeah, go on. What? So it's been a good ride so far. And quite honestly, I quite enjoy it so far, mostly because, you know, like I say, you have this different character, different power dynamic. They've got to keep it secret from everyone, which is, of course, kind of easy grounds for comedy and misunderstandings and characters having to like bend over backwards to try and find out ways so they won't be rumbled. It particularly has a good sense of comic timing with its panels. One of the chapters opens with the two characters like sharing conversation and going, okay, can we go on a date? And then Juliet goes, no, you idiot. It's really difficult to do anything and we'll be seen. And Inazuka's like, oh, but can't we? And she goes, well, no, you idiot. We're hiding to have this. We're having this conversation in a confessional chamber because it's the only way we can not be found out. And then the camera, of course, pans out to the outside of a confessional. So it kind of works really well. I've just murdered it with a really slow retelling there. But it has a very good sense for, you know, sort of eliding the joke and also like having really good comic timing for just going, oh, here's the punchline. So it really works well in like comedic panel timing in that way, which really helps make it really sort of like worth a good laugh. It reminds me vaguely of School Rumble, but I must admit I hated School Rumble. And so this is kind of a weirdly much, much better, for me at least, kind of that sort of series. It kind of face plants towards the end, though. The end of this first volume introduces another character and starts to produce like a love polygon that's more serious than the one that came before. And it feels a bit too intense. And it feels like the series jumps into really high gear before then going, oh, maybe we better resolve this in some way and ratchet things back down again, because we've just jumped from volume one to volume eight somehow. So yeah, I kind of enjoy it, but equally that sort of plot line left a sour taste in my mouth by the end. Just because of how crazy intense it suddenly got. Like, it went from no stakes to very intensely high stakes out of nowhere, and then had to try and play the entire thing off for a gag. But yeah, it's really fun in that regard, just because you have Inazuka in particular being this sort of besotted twit, and lots of good faces, lots of really good faces, stupid characters. You know, you have the pair of each of the main cast have their own hanger-on who clearly fancy them or are weirdly indebted to them. And so there's going to be some tension there, I bet, at some point. Hazuki in particular is like the Inazuka's sort of secondhand man slash girl who is really funny, but unfortunately is a one-note character at the moment, because she literally exists to try and fiend after Inazuka after he's already left the frame. So kind of a good joke, but one that wears thin. At the moment, the series is 10 volumes long in Japan, ongoing, and it's got 6 volumes released in English from Kodansha. I am kind of tempted to get volume 2 just to see where it goes after this podcast. But yeah, I've kind of rambled on long enough at this point without taking a breath. So Andy, what did you think of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think kind of simple fun is kind of what summed up for me. I mean, there's nothing that kind of stands out in terms of like the overall plot or kind of how things play out. Like, I mean, if we're doing comparisons, kind of like Nisekoi is kind of the obvious one for me. It kind of hits a lot of the same notes. I think the thing that made this first volume work for me is simply the dynamic between the two lead characters. Like, it starts out a little bit clunky, but like kind of by the end of that volume, there's a really nice kind of feel between the two main characters, between Romeo and Juliet. It's kind of, I mean, it's something that I've talked about with other romance-led series that we've talked about on this podcast, where I get frustrated when I can't buy into the fact that these two characters are going out, because it's like, well, they don't really seem to like have anything that kind of like bonds them together. Whereas here, like, it feels like that chemistry is there. Like, you know, even if it's not from sort of page one, kind of the more time they spend with each other, it's like, yeah, these two, they actually kind of like work out quite nicely as a kind of double act. And you kind of, it got to the point where, you know, the parts of every chapter I was looking forward to were the snatches of kind of moments that the two main characters actually get to spend together, because they've kind of got a real nice kind of little dynamic going on there. So that definitely kind of eased me into this, kind of after reading the first few chapters and sort of being like, yeah, this is all right, I guess. There's nothing spectacular, but I definitely warmed to those two leads, and that kind of helped to kind of get me more on board with the series, or with this volume at least as a whole.
Yeah, I can, yeah, definitely. I think you've helped crystallize something in my head where it's just like, as you say, the dynamic is very, very interesting. Like, they both have very different, like, yeah, aims, not aims, but, you know, just they have different sort of things that are driving them. Like, Inazuka's a bit more base and a bit less interested. He's just like head over heels, puppy love sort of thing. Whereas Juliet has a very clear goal, and the way that the two play off each other and kind of orbit each other is not just like standard dull static. It's very much a case of, you know, back and forth. And there's even in the first volume, there's already discussions of like, hey, something bothering you? No, it's fine. And it's like, well, I'll be here if you want to tell me about it, all right? And, you know, even just that is kind of like way more advanced and kind of grown up than most volume ones of romance series.
Yeah.
So it's kind of refreshing to have that.
Totally. And again, like from what little I'd seen, I mean, I was at that same Hibanacon panel as you, and also had the same reaction to that fight scene of just like, oh man, maybe I should watch more of this. And, you know, which is another reason why, you know, I kind of wanted to read this first volume as well. But one of the things I was expecting from what little I'd seen of the series was like, oh, Juliet's just going to be your typical kind of dyed-in-the-wool tsundere character. But that's actually like not really the case at all. Because even when she's kind of like pushing Romeo away, it's not kind of your typical like no, I don't like you, but I do really. It's more a case of, look, I'm busy with my own shit right now. Like, you know, I have things that I need to do and that kind of society expects me to do within this boarding school. So I just don't have time to deal with you. Like, it's never a case of like, I like you, but I'm not going to admit it. It's more a case of like, you know, I have to prioritize other things as well. So like, bear with me while I try and balance my life out here.
Yeah, that's Juliet is the far more interesting character, as you say, because it is a case of like, hey, I want to give this relationship thing a go. That's all cool. But you need to be aware that we both are risking a lot here. Like, keep your head on your shoulders. But yeah, I mean, at the same time, that's what kind of makes Inazuka kind of endearing to me, at least, is that he's a giant puppy dog, but also knows when to listen to what the hell he's being told.
Again, he's not kind of like just that one dimensional, just kind of, you know, fawning after her. Like, you know, he goes out and gets things done and makes things happen as well. And, you know, for all the kind of typical, more cliched moments of misunderstandings, et cetera, like, there is something refreshing about the way those two characters go about their business, because they both feel believable, even in this kind of unbelievable scenario. You know, it's like, oh, well, these countries are practically at war, so therefore, you know, the two factions in this school are at war. It's like, it's a really lazy conceit to kick off the series, but it kind of gets away with it simply on the strength of kind of some of its cast.
Yeah, both primary and like, so even just some of the bit part characters. Like, that dude, he's got a padlock through his ear hole. Like, what are you doing, lad? Wouldn't that hurt?
Yeah, but you know. I'm definitely with you that I really hope some of those kind of secondary characters get some time in future volumes. Because yeah, like Hazuki and I think it's Simon on like Juliet's side.
Yeah, Simon. Simon is like the ultimate fucking like just, you know, trombone noise whenever he appears on screen. Just like, brr, 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 you know, this fucking idiot runs into frame.
Yeah, like, I mean, during this first volume, I kind of found myself, like, writing my own fan fiction in my head where Hazuki and Simon end up kind of getting together as kind of the kind of jilted deputies of just like, you know what, these guys don't clearly have no interest in us, but, you know, we're kind of cut from the same cloth. We'll probably get on okay. Let's date as well. Let's have a spin-off manga.
At the risk of sounding a bit weird, yeah, I have that in my notes as well. Like, flat out at the end, I'm like, oh, if these two went out, that'd be a real funny story. Like, yeah, that'd be funny. But yeah, also, yeah, the two, at the very least, the two of them could just fall in as being like jilted friends.
Yeah. I just want them to get some more depth to their characters, because as you mentioned, they're both kind of one note, but they seem like they're both kind of cool. I like them both, and I kind of want to see a bit more of them and a bit of flesh on their bones. So,
well, you've already seen Hazuki's flesh a few times because she's tried to come on to Inazuka a bit heavy. So, you know.
Well, yes, I mean, we have seen more flesh than we should probably want to in this series. I mean, as much as I actually really like the art style and character designs of this series as a whole, volume as a whole, like, it looks, again, nothing kind of groundbreaking or spectacular, but it all looks really nice, and it kind of, it all fits. And you know, when there's action, it's kind of well played out. You know, again, you said like the faces and expressiveness is all really good. Like, it was really pleasing on the eye without ever being kind of like, oh, look at this unique thing it's done. It's just like, it's just a very well drawn manga.
Yeah, the characters really are expressive, right? And yeah, I really do like it. It's, as you say, it's one of these things where you look at it and go, this is really well pulled off. And it's kind of hard for you to go, it's not like frigging, you know, Solo Exchange Die, where you like lose your mind about it. You know, this is a good manga, a dang good manga. And frankly, sometimes, you know, especially in the romance stakes, it can be fine to find something that actually pulls it all off competently. So yeah. I mean, my weird now you've pulled off the like the band-aid on the fan fiction bucket, my personal sort of dumb side story of this is where the end of the manga has Inazuka and Juliet going their separate ways because life takes over, and then Hazuki and Scott get together and they end up brokering peace between the two nations. Surprise! The bit part characters were actually the real characters. So yeah, that's my fanfic.
Yeah, that would be good. So yeah, if anybody wants to hire us to write a boarding school Juliet spin-off manga, you can find us at this email.
We're available for light novel duties. Jeez. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. I'm probably gonna get volume 2 when I get a moment, because I think it's on sale in Kodansha's like end of season sale thingy ding. So yeah.
Yeah, it's a cute series. Again, like, I mean, having talked about it with other series, like, I hope it doesn't outstay its welcome at any point, because, like, having compared it to Nisekoi, which, like, I loved that series for a few volumes, and then it just kind of piles on more and more characters and kind of gets more and more kind of convoluted in just trying to keep its core premise going and all of its plates spinning. And then I kind of dropped off of it. Like, I'd like to see a series that has the kind of, you know, adorable relationship stuff as that and, you know, some decent comedy, but without kind of going to that crazy, oh, we just need to keep piling in more love interest, because that gets old pretty fast.
When the button you have available to be pressed is add more lasses, at some point you need to stop pressing that damn button. So, yeah. Whoops. Cool. So, moving on to your pick. So, Andy, I'm glad you, as we mentioned last time, I'm glad you picked this, because I was jonesing to pick it as well. So, take it away.
Yeah. Ironically, this time around, I feel like we both kind of picked one another's picks in this weird kind of like almost Secret Santa-esque in a strange sort of way.
Yeah, with less dumb gag presents. Like, yes. Surprise, I got you a thong. Why? Because I'm an asshole.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not going to talk about the fact that I bought somebody a copy of a Butterigus going, I work Secret Santa.
Oh, you jerk! Don't do that!
I know. I'm a terrible human being. I apologize. But anyway.
Apologize to them, Andy.
I did profusely. Don't worry. So my pick for this show is Wakekezake Volume 1, which, again, kind of going back to our previous podcast in life, we kind of talked animatedly about the anime of this quite a while ago, the fact that the manga has been localized and released in English by North Stars Pictures is a name I not really heard.
So North Star Pictures is a really weird, like, so it basically emerged out of nowhere, but basically it's Tetsuo Ohara's company, i.e. the dude what made Fist of the North Star. And basically they have an entire shadow empire of different publishers and stuff, and decided just to go their own way with very little fanfare or notice in the Western market. And they released two series to start with, it being Wakekezake and a series called Art, A-R-T-E, which is like a Renaissance era set in Italy starring a like Miss Hokusai, but Renaissance, check it out. It's basically female Leonardo da Vinci, but not the fake Grand Order one. But yeah, so that's where North Star Pictures comes from. Okay. And also why everyone is mystified by them turning up, because they just suddenly appeared in the market one day and were like, here you go. And it's like, all right, okay, thanks. Shit.
Yeah, yeah, like the gestation of that just makes the whole thing even crazier, given that Wakekezake is very different from Fist of the North Star, it is fair to say.
But more similar than you'd imagine.
So it is the story of a 20-something woman called Wakeku Murasaki, who basically just likes going out and eating and drinking on her own, which in itself is kind of a really interesting little thing just to see that depicted straight, because, like, going out on your own to eat or go to cinema or whatever is kind of still something of kind of a weird sort of social taboo, of just like people feel uncomfortable going out and doing these things alone because somehow like it's not the done thing. And, you know, if you're going out to eat, it should be to be like social as part of a group.
Yeah. I mean, it's the sort of thing that generally gets mocked in like comedy sketches. Like, even comedy shows I've seen recently have had like the lone diner trope.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and again, especially like in anime and manga, like if you have a character that likes to spend a lot of their time on their own, it's usually played up as this kind of sort of almost like anti-hero angle of like, oh yeah, I have no friends, but you know, here's what I do, or you know, it's the usual kind of otaku tropes. Whereas that's not the case with this character. She has a boyfriend, like, and she's quite happy, as you see in some of the chapters, going out with friends or going to a wedding or whatever and hanging out with other people. But it just so happens that she enjoys her own company, and she enjoys going at her own pace and, you know, having a meal and having some drinks with that meal. And so, like, ostensibly, Wakekezake is kind of a food manga. Like, it, certainly in terms of the artwork, like, the food gets all of the love lavished upon it, and everything else is expressive but reasonably basic. Like, Wakeke herself looks kind of weird, to be quite honest, and like, you know, it is very much as kind of the epilogue to this volume points out, like it is a literal kind of self-insert of the author, because basically while she was just kind of chowing down on a meal and wine that her editor had bought for her to talk about what she's going to do in terms of her next series, I think basically like out of exasperation, like, look, you're always just going out eating, just make a manga of that already, why don't you?
Write what you know.
Exactly.
But and, yeah, it's real wild, because in all the omakes and the author's notes, like, she puts care into her little avatar, but when it comes to the series and having, you know, Murasaki, she's like a weird pixie demon thing with huge eyes. Like, she's like a food elemental.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. And they're also, like, it's really great kind of between chapters. There are little kind of vignettes of just like, oh yeah, like, here's the vague location of the real life place that this kind of restaurant was based upon. And clearly, like, she's gone around taking photos of these restaurants and this food and the people who work in these restaurants. And there's some quite amusing little comedy asides where, like, you know, people who work in certain restaurants are kind of pissed off. It's like, oh man, I had took the day off the day that you did all the research for this chapter, so I guess I'm not turning up in your manga then, even though I'm the regular waiter here, and all of that kind of stuff. But yeah, so basically, like, every chapter is, you know, Wakako goes out, has some food, has some something to drink. She has some thoughts about said food and drink and kind of why it goes so well together, why she enjoys it. And, you know, there's at some point it kind of stops being a food series purely and sort of becomes something more existential in a weird kind of way. Like, one of the things I really enjoy about this series is there are often kind of background conversations going on with other people eating elsewhere in the restaurant that, you know, Wakako kind of listens in on or just kind of overhears. And, you know, that kind of just reminds her, like, oh yeah, you know, like, in one chapter, for example, there's a couple like next to her in the restaurant that are like going out on a first date, and she's kind of listening to that, like, oh yeah, I've totally, you know, done this dance before. And it's like, oh yeah, maybe this isn't gonna last, like, listen, the guy's being a bit of a jerk, kind of trying to show off his knowledge and stuff like that. And there are all these just really nice little vignettes of just kind of life going on around her that she sort of observes in a very indirect way. Like, you know, she's not really casting judgment on anybody particularly. It's just like, oh yeah, it's the kind of thing that just happens, you know. If you're anybody who's anything of a kind of a people watcher, yeah, you know, you just kind of notice what other people are doing around you and, you know, maybe snatches of conversation they have. And, you know, sometimes that kind of, you know, triggers memories of your own, or, you know, you maybe just, it brings up some kind of thought process. And there's something enjoyable about this series in terms of just watching that kind of everyday life going by while the main character is here enjoying food and a drink that is almost my main draw above the food. It's like, some of the food is like, oh yeah, this looks good, I'd probably like to eat that. But more often than not, it's just like, oh no, this just seems like a good night out. It's,
yeah,
like,
I mean I
would be up for this.
I mean, yeah, I mean, as you mentioned at the start, like, eating alone is one of those taboo things that, I don't know, on a personal level, I kind of at one point kind of stopped caring about wholesale and didn't think it weird anymore because I was traveling a lot on my own anyway so much. But it kind of, like, it, having her on her own makes it really fascinating as like a vehicle for, here's what Wakako thinks. But I mean, like you say, it gets really existential, just fascinating, like way more fascinating than you'd imagine a manga chapter in 9 pages could be. Like when she goes out and has like fried chicken and she's just musing on like kind of how terrible it is for her and how she should not be eating it whatsoever. But man alive, fried chicken's pretty dope. So, you know, it's just this musing on the wonder and magic of fried chicken, which is completely true and accurate because, man, fried chicken. So, yeah, it really works in that way. Like, even there's like an ongoing sort of thing which happens with like a coworker, like a junior at her office who, when you first see, you only see him twice and in basically 2 panels total, one of which she's like, damn you, I had to do your work. And the next time it's like, oh, I got praised because he's not shit anymore. And it's that sort of like, it's not like a plot line or a storyline or something you need to put in the Wakako wiki or whatever. It's just a thing that is a nice backdrop element to, oh, check it out, I got chicken skin, you know, sort of thing. So, yeah. But yeah, also, sorry,
carry on. Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, like the little kind of, you know, after work thing of just like kind of her internal monologue, just having a bit of a moan of basically like, yeah, had a shitty day at work today. And then like, yeah, like you say, another occasion, like, oh man, everything went really well today, I should kind of have a little mini celebration here. It's just, again, like, I think basically anybody can relate to that on some level of just like, you know, it's not kind of, hey, I won the lottery, or hey, I got fired. It's just those little kind of victories and defeats that everyday life brings you that are kind of important parts of the fabric of your life that you probably don't think about beyond the day in question. But like at that moment, like that's the thing and that's the focus. And that's just kind of enjoyable to see brought to life in the way that this series does it.
Yeah, totally. It really works in that regard, just because it's like, hey, you know, small things happen in life. Like, not everything's the end of the world. So let's have some food. And yeah, it really is kind of a calming thing. It's nice to dip in and out of for that regard, because also it's like, you know, each chapter is like 7 or 8 pages, so you can burn, you know, you could burn through it, but it's nice just to dip into and go, oh, I wonder what happens this time. And the art's really nice, like when it wants, I mean, like I mentioned before that Wakako herself is kind of a weird, like almost like a food elemental, but the drawing's really nice. The art is really good. Like it puts the art where it needs to, especially when it comes to the food or, you know, elaborating on the sort of the mise-en-scene, forgive me for using a fancy word, but like the environment of the food eating sort of element of just like, hey, I'm at this place. It's nice and quiet. I've got a little corner table. I'm just going to sit here and eat this weird fish thing. And it's really nice about showing the environment and also the food. Like you won't just get the food itself, but also just, you know, the heat it's giving off and how it splits apart and all that sort of stuff, which, you know, it isn't trying to slap you in the face about it and go, check it out. It's just like, hey, this is part of the joy of this is, you know, picking up the fish and just slowly teasing it away. Even if you see it sometimes and go, that looks gross.
Yeah, but it's also really impressive the way it does that with still shots, because I mean in anime, like you can make food look great in anime, and you can, you know, animate, you know, the heat coming off of it, the way you cut it open, and you know, the sauce or whatever will kind of, you know, drain out of it, and there's a lot you can do to make that look really appealing. It's a lot more difficult to do that in just a still shot, but this series does an incredibly good job of kind of bringing across, like you say, the heat and the texture and, you know, the sauce or the moisture of it. Like, you know, it puts across everything that it clearly, that the volume is clearly trying to about each food stuff, which, you know, sometimes that stuff is like, oh, that's a really well-drawn piece of food, but it doesn't like look tasty necessarily. It just looks like a very good rendition of that food. Whereas this, yeah, you know, you can kind of feel what Wakako feels about it in that moment of just like, oh yeah, like I can see why you'd be excited when this landed on in front of you on a plate.
Yeah. I mean, to go back to the fried chicken again, you see the fried chicken in the manga and you go, man, fried chicken. That looks like death. Like you know it's good, but at the same time, it's like, check out how fucking oily this shit is. And yeah, it is. I mean, it kind of ties into like, I mean, particularly in Japan, like we've both been, both me and Yumandy have been to Japan, and they have like a thing which is, it's like a gastro pub, but if it was done properly and not stupid like it is here, where you pay £12 for a fucking shite burger. But they have izakayas, which are basically a drinking hole where you can order little nibble dishes and they're just made straight in front of you, basically. And that stuff is rad. So that's kind of like where the infinite possibility of this series comes from, is you can basically just sit somewhere and go, hey, I'll have some form of duck stew and a beer, and it'll turn up and you go, sweet. So yeah, that's kind of the one little sort of cultural note that, if anything, just makes me want to go back to Japan real bad, unsurprisingly.
Yeah, there was that angle too, and there are some really nice little bits of comedy as well. There are some really good one-liners. I mean, it's enjoyable. Like, you know, Wakako going to a wedding is great, because like, oh, I can't wait to like congratulate the bride and groom and also drink all the wine, and like, you know, and basically all of her friends around us are just like, you're just here for the food, aren't you? Really? And it's like, clearly her reputation precedes her.
Yeah, I feel like this is, if ever there was like a case of like a manga artist finding their calling, it's this one, maybe. Especially given that editor sort of gag where the editor's like, maybe you should ask before ordering more food on my tab, and she's just like, whoops, never mind.
Yeah, well, she doesn't even really seem very apologetic about that. It's just like, well, you know, what are you gonna do?
You can't stop me now, bitch.
Yeah, like this is basically research at this point, so you know, this is fine.
thanks boss. Yeah, but yeah, I really enjoy it. I'm looking forward to it. I'm not sure when volume 2 comes out. I'm excited by the fact that, as you've put here, that there's 9 volumes in Japan, so that's good.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully it's done all right for them, and they will continue with that, because again, kind of being the strange kind of come out of nowhere company that they are, there's always that question of like, you know, is this some like tax hole somewhere that's just going to get shut down? Like, I hope not. I hope this will continue to come out, because it's a hard show to, it's a hard series to recommend, because you mention its core elements, like, well, nothing about that sounds interesting, but like when you merge them all together in the way that this series does, like it's weirdly compelling.
Yeah, it really is. If all else fails, the anime is on Crunchyroll, and it's what, like 3 minutes an episode?
Yeah.
And it's also some of the longest 3 minutes of your life, because it luxuriates in it. And I think the two of them kind of complement each other very well, because they both do what they need to do to show you what it wants to show you really well, which I feel should be high praise. At least I think it is. So yeah, there you are.
And weirdly, there is going to be, I don't think it's out yet, but there's going to be a live action as well.
Oh no, there already is. Yeah, I know.
Is that already out as well?
Yeah, you know, Robert's watched it already. He's a big fan. Cool. Although it's a bit weird because like live action Makako has to pull funny faces and she's kind of creepily good at it. From what I remember being talking about it with him. But yeah, there is a live action Makako Zake. But I'm really glad we got to read this. Was already a fan, but yeah, it's like revisiting it. I'm like, yeah, this is good. Plus, you know, I know we live in a weird, strange, benighted world where, like, you know, one of the weird mantras that people have to go under is like self-care. But like, legit, like eating something nice and drinking something nice and optionally, but still important if you'd like it, is good company. It goes a long way, especially when you've had a hard day or you just want to like empty your brain.
Yeah, for sure. And again, that's one of the interesting things about the series as well, is like, you know, when it kind of just puts out there's like, oh yeah, like Makako totally has a boyfriend, and it's like, it's kind of again nice to see that it's not like, oh well, I have a boyfriend, so therefore we have to spend all our time together. It's like, no, I just want to go out on my own sometimes, and that's cool with all concerned. It's like, yeah, that's kind of nice to see. Like, you don't see that in manga very often.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, all the stuff about Wakako's life is all sort of handled with like an almost like, well, with a really good touch of just like, yeah, nothing is the be-all end-all. Like, life is a confluence of different stuff, so no need to obsess over it. Like, we're here for the food, damn it. So yeah cool. But no, really enjoyed that. So cool. Next, going on to what we're talking about next time. So this will be our first series of 2019. Dun. So first and foremost, I have picked a romance series, which I picked up previously and read about 10 pages of and thought, I want to talk about this a bit more. And that is Kiss Me at the Stroke of Midnight, which I think it, so that's volume one. I think it's into like a decent number of volumes at this point. Scrolling, volume 8 just came out recently. So yeah, there's that. Another romance-y doodah. So how about you, Andy?
Cool. Yeah, I have also picked a romance story, question mark. Caterpillar Girl and Bad Texter Boy, which, I mean, that is, I don't think I need to extrapolate too much on that. I picked it mostly because I read that title. I was like, well, that's a good title, so I should probably see what this is about.
Yeah, and even if the title doesn't, the cover art does, that's for sure.
Yes, indeed. But this is also a romance story of sorts, it seems. So I kind of checked out a preview of a few pages. It's like, this could end up being awful, but it's also kind of fascinating from what I've seen so far. So sure, I'm in to read all of this.
Yeah, let's go for it. Sod it. I mean, it's a one volume banger, isn't it? I think
it is indeed. Yeah, I believe it is a one shot as well. So that's always a bonus.
Cool. So final parts of the show. We can kind of skip the like release schedule bit because we're kind of too far ahead of ourselves in terms of releases. Whoops. But as I mentioned, like, interested to see what happens with the Shonen Jump thing starting tomorrow. Jesus. Hope it doesn't fall on its face. So close down. So thank you very much for listening. You can find our website at screentone.club. There you can find links to all of our previous episodes, as well as a sort of catch-up list of all the series we have covered, along with links to the individual episodes. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, on any other podcast catchers of note. If they have the ability to do so, we would greatly appreciate it if you left a rating, or even if you fancy it, a review. That stuff really, really helps with discoverability. Tell a friend, Twitter, you know, it still exists. It's a hell site. We all love it for some reason. So, finally, you can find our Patreon at patreon.com/screentoneclub. If you fancy, feel free to chuck us a buck or two there, and that will get you bonus episodes and the ability to vote on those bonus episodes for what we cover. People being very polite, as mentioned. And we have our Twitter at screentoneclub. I promise my resolution of 2019 is to get better at social media-ing, so you'll see more stuff on there. You can also contact us via email, show@screentone.club, and you can find me, Elliot, at Elliot Page. I'm getting back to posting more cat pictures now. I need to let the cat out. Hang on, she's going bananas. Andy, please cover for me.
Yes, indeed. You can find me on Twitter, where I'll probably be posting screenshots of torture robots or other weird things that I see in anime.
Yeah, what the hell was that from?
That's from Release the Spice. It's a very... a very brief cameo of a torture robot, but it amused me because it just says, "Hello, I'm a torture robot."
At least it's polite in introducing itself.
Indeed, yeah. That's all you can ask for before you're going to be tortured mercilessly by an automaton. But anyway, you can find such wonders on Twitter at Hannahs1979.
Cool. So thank you very much. Sorry about that. The cat has now been let out. Thank you very much for listening. We will see you in 2019, apart from our Patreon subscribers, because you'll get a bonus episode just before the new year. We need to actually plan the recording of that. But yeah, thank you very much, everyone, and have a lovely Christmas. If you are listening on Christmas itself, come on. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, your family are probably waiting for you, but have a Merry Christmas, and we'll see you soon.
Yeah. On that note, if you need to escape your family, don't worry about it. We won't judge you. Sod it. You know. You can only take being beaten at Scrabble too many times, frankly. Anyway, take care.